If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
And here we are again.
It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood.
I know you're looking at me strange, Reggie. Just remember, in a couple of weeks or a month or so, that phrase will be top of the mind in the pop culture world, and you'll see why. I'm not even going to tell you why. Just remember, well, you heard me reference that here in middle of November. Okay, are you ready, sir? Good. Thumbs up. Levels look good here. Levels must look good in there because it's the same levels. So let's do this thing. Okay, ready? Yeah. Episode 182. Put it down. I'll do the three S's here. Star, smile, strong. And let's get started. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure, or not only at WGNplus.com, but anywhere where you find your favorite podcast. This podcast is there too. And if you are on another platform, that's fine. Subscribe to that platform, rate this podcast, hopefully give it the highest rating you can, and most important, spread the word. Your endorsement, your word of mouth is more valuable than any paid advertisement. So send a friend a link. Send a friend an email and pass the word about Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, your favorite podcast. And if you like what you hear, whether you're a new listener or a crusty old veteran who's been around for 2 or 3 years since I've been doing this, back in, 2016? It's been a while. Go to my landing page at WGNplus.com. Go to the entertainment section. You'll see the prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Click on there and you'll find all previous 181 episodes. Yeah, folks, we've been doing this for a while. So if there's 181 in there, in the vault, I'm no mathematician, but even I could do this and I'll show my work. This is episode 182. What I'd like to talk about today is an interesting little wrinkle in our cultural world. And it's not just the culture, but it's also pop culture, I guess. The two have been merging for the last 3 decades, I would say, ever since MTV. You cannot discount the impact of MTV. You really can't. I know it was just music videos. I know it was just, you know, Michael Jackson and Flock of Seagulls and Men at Work and Madonna and Prince and Bruce Springsteen and Thompson Twins and back in the 80s when this all started and Dire Straits. But you cannot discount the impact that MTV had, because that one station, that one network channel that was offered on cable was so appealing and so attractive that it was the driving force for a majority of this country, if not the world, to make the big leap from just enjoying free television, as limited as it was, 3 or 4 networks, a couple of local stations, a couple of snowy UHF stations, and say, I want more. And namely, I want my MTV. And I'm willing to pay, at that time, you know, $20 a month or $30 a month. That was big stuff back in the mid-80s. But that is when, really, I think, pop culture and the culture began to move closer to one another. Before that, they were two separate entities. There was the culture that was mostly filled with politics and behaviors and, you know, government and world issues. That was the culture. And then there was pop culture, kind of a diversion, entertainment, music, you name it, you know, light and fluffy stuff, but not the important stuff, you know, of everyday living. But when we got all those new channels and all that new input, and suddenly the world was bigger from what was being shown us on television, on the limited amount of choices we had, the culture couldn't help but begin to burst at its seams. And, as I said, add in pop culture. I think our culture today is pop culture. There is no culture without it. When we go online, we are seeing stories about celebrities on the top line of the headlines, mixed right in with stuff that's going on in the White House, stuff that's going on around the world, wars, famines, weather, and then we hear about Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt and Snoop Dogg and Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson. They're all there. They share equal billing. And you cannot discount the impact that the internet has had in the last 20 years, and you certainly the engine that really, you know, or I guess the engine was the internet, and then but the oil, the gasoline that really made the engine roar was social media, in the advent of Facebook and MySpace and some of these things, that, and then Twitter, and then the rest of it was history. And in many ways, it was the embracing of these technologies into everyday behavior that has given them such influence. And the one group that has completely embraced them and put their heft and their numbers and their consumer power behind them are the millennials, who are now in their 30s, have come of age, and are beginning to certainly make their influence known in our culture. And that's what we're talking about today. And I think I have a unique perspective on this, because I feel like I'm in limbo on this topic, because I'm hovering above it to some extent, but yet I'm right in it. And you say, Jim, how could you play both sides? It's like you're floating, you're in limbo. Well, maybe I am. I'll lay my case out. You tell me where I'm at. How's that? So not sure if you've heard, but there is a new phrase that is beginning to sweep the nation and the world as part of our culture. And a little background before I tell you it. Over the last at least 10 years, maybe 7 or 8, maybe 5, but there's no question that a new generation gap was beginning to show itself as the millennial generation began to grow up and become part of the real culture now, not just teenagers, but in their 20s and now in their 30s, right? On paper, the millennials are adults. I know they still feel that adulting is a verb as opposed to a noun, of something that you should be, not just something that you may temporarily do. But, you know, when you're in your 30s, you should be an adult. You should be responsible, paying your rent, paying your mortgage, paying your bills, being out in society, having a job, contributing, starting a family or starting a career. Right? That's the way it used to be. It used to be a lot younger. By the time you were 18, you were expected to do that. Now we have people 40 still finding themselves. It's an interesting cultural shift. I don't know if it's good or not, but it's reality. So that's what we have to deal with, whether it's good or not. Sure, I've been a critic of some of the things that millennials do. There certainly seems to be a sense of expectation or entitlement. But, you know, it's not their fault. That's how they were raised. They were raised asking for something and getting it, or sometimes getting stuff that they didn't even know they wanted, by eager parents who were out to, you know, do better than their parents did.
You know, the baby boomers' parents of the great generation, the World War II generation, you know, they lived a tough life. There wasn't a lot of economic opportunity initially. There were two world wars, at least one world war involved there. And there was a lot of economic instability. And there were a lot of different factors. Not everybody was college educated. There was more of a working class, more of a union, blue-collar country than we have now, which is more college educated and white collar. It's a whole different world. I don't have children, so it's easy for me. I guess some people could say, "Well, Jim, you're talking out of school because you never had children." I always counter that by saying, "Well, that's why I think I could be a little more objective because I don't have skin in the game on that." And so when I look at this, I say, "Yeah, you know, every parent wants better for their child." But I think many parents over the last 30 years went to such a degree to be friends because their parents weren't there. I had to laugh. I weren't being friends. They were being disciplinarians and parents. And today there's more of a nurturing world. Nothing wrong with that. Although, once again, we always go from one extreme to another. It seems that in nature, the best route is moderation. And especially here in the United States, we rarely do that. We go from something real bad, and to counteract that, we go to the way other side. And then we have to move ourselves back. But I don't know why we always have to do that, but we do. We try to overcompensate, and then we find ourselves in worse trouble than we were before. In terms of parenting, there was a phrase that I heard when I was growing up, and even then it sounded a little outdated, but it was still being said. There was still the thought there. This was before the other generation was leaving. And I was watching an old rerun just last week. How timely was this? Just last week, I was watching an old rerun of there was a game show called Beat the Clock. And you had, you know, couples came on and they did stunts. And if they did it in a certain amount of time, they won a prize. So they had these crazy stunts. They had 50 or seconds or a minute to do it. And if they could do this crazy stunt, they won. It was called Beat the Clock. And it was one of the first game shows on television in the early, mid-50s. Very popular. And one of the ways to win extra money was that they would have a famous phrase that was on a board with movable words, like magnetic board, but all the words were jumbled around, and so the person who was playing had to put the phrase in its proper order, right? So all the words were jumbled around, and you had to put the phrase into its proper order. And this was a phrase, believe it or not, it's hard to even grasp this in 2019, but people who are a little older will certainly know it, and people that are younger will be aghast that there was even such a phrase, and that it was popular, and that it was followed, and it was given credence. People in today, kids and even maybe some adults in today's world will be aghast. Maybe you've heard it, maybe you haven't, but here was the phrase. Children are to be seen and not heard. Can you imagine in 2019 that being kind of a slogan or an adage to follow in terms of parenting? Children are to be seen, not heard. Today, a four-year-old is given credence for their opinions. There was a time when children did not run the roost. I know that's hard for people to believe, especially in today's world, but there was a time when the adults actually ran the household, and children were not given an equal say. Was that right or wrong? I'm not going to comment on that, but I know that in today's parenting world,
we are reacting to the children are to be seen, not heard adage that many raised their children by for decades. And that's why now we have parents are to be seen, not heard. Look, there are a lot of factors that go into behaviors. We as a species continue to evolve, not just physically, but mentally and socially. And things that were commonplace 30 or 40 or 50 years ago today seem impossible to have happened, but they did. And thankfully, we look back at some of those things and we say how terrible that was. That's the goal, to continue to move forward, to continue to be enlightened, and to continue to improve upon the past where there were mistakes made. And we have made mistakes as a culture and as a species, no question about that. And we will continue to make it. That's just part of the game. We are a flawed species. And so we will continue to make mistakes. We are a species that is very afraid. We're afraid of a lot of things. Mainly we're afraid of dying, which informs almost every decision that we make, whether we realize it or not. But to get back to this, so the millennials are now grabbing more attention and grabbing more control. They don't have it yet because the baby boomer generation is aging, but because of medical technologies, the baby boomer generation is living longer. And the baby boomer generation, like the millennials, have big numbers. That's why it was called the baby boomers. Don't forget, that term originated when World War II ended and when all the servicemen came back. And I just say that because the majority of the people who were in the Army were men at that time. There were women, certainly, but not in big numbers, and certainly not fighting on the fronts. Not like today, as I said, times have changed. But in 1945, that's not the way things were done. So the baby boom refers to when men came home from the war. Guess what a lot of people started doing as soon as they came home from the war and hadn't seen their wives or hadn't had girlfriends and boyfriends and two or three or four years. Guess what they did? Good old birds and bees. And so there was a baby boom after the war, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later. Now, the sociologists, they like to make generations into 20-year little pockets to make things easier for their history and their designation. And so the baby boom generation, I think, extends a little too much. I, for instance, am right on the cusp of being a baby boomer and a Gen Xer. I'm right in the middle between the two. But I'm not a baby. I was not born right after World War II. So I don't really believe I belong. And this is why I say I think I have a unique viewpoint. I feel I've always felt out of sorts because I'm not fully embraced and in one of those generations. I am the gap in the generation gap because I'm right on this cusp of what you're talking about. I was raised by Depression era parents. My parents were older when they had me. So I had a lot of those influences from them, but then I was born and raised mostly in the 70s and 80s, and so now I had the cultural influence of a different viewpoint of a younger generation as opposed to the older. So I had
influences of both, and it's always a push and pull with me, as I don't feel fully rooted in one generational mindset. So I don't really, even though my parents were from the World War II generation, or, you know, even Depression era, they were older. So by the time I was born, I was already lumped in with people who were born 15 years before me. And that's not, I don't really have, I have more in common with them, certainly in many ways. But I also have things in common with a later generation, because that's where I was born with. And when I was in my 20s, say Generation X was in their 50s, it was in their teens, I wasn't all that far away. And we were being influenced by the same culture at that time. So there's a mishmash. It's not as clean. So they like to say, oh, well, a baby boomer is from 1945 to 1965, and then the millennials are from, you know, and then Generation X is from 65 to 85, and millennials are from 85 to 2005. And everything, you know, seems nice, but nothing is that way. Those are man-made things. But if we're going to go by that, as I said, I'm right on the cusp. So I feel like I'm nowhere and everywhere. And that's why I think I have a unique perspective to talk about this topic. So millennials have been complained about for the last several years. And once again, what I find interesting is that nobody's complaining about their parents. Who raised them? Millennials didn't just drop out of the sky. Someone raised them. So if you're critical of the millennial generation, I think you have to be critical of the baby boomer generation who raised them. And yet those are the ones who are complaining, as if, well, where did this come from? Well, you know, it came from your household. So there's a lot of denial, there's a lot of hypocrisy, but as I said, there's also a lot of humanness in this, because we are a flawed species. But anyway, so yes, the knock against millennials, whether it's deserved or not, is that they're entitled, that they have high expectations, that they're immature, that they want everything handed to them, that they think that anything that they do is great, and anything from the past is terrible. I don't know. Isn't that every generation, folks? Really? At the end of the day? Every generation thinks they're the best. Every generation has had it a little better than their parents. Every generation believes they have all the answers. It's always been that way. It was that way in biblical times. It's been that way from the first tribes of cavemen. It's not going to change. It's getting more play today because, as I said, the internet and social media just elevates the noise and elevates the conversation. But it's always been the same. There's always been a generation gap. There was a generation gap between the baby boomers and the World War II or the, you know, the Depression era generation. There was a time when children were supposedly to be seen and not heard. And we have moved forward, hopefully. But so, yes, there's been a lot of complaining about the millennials as they begin to exert their power through their sheer numbers. But as I said, the baby boomers are not ready to give up. They've always felt that the world revolved around them, and they, in old age, they still do. They're not leaving without a fight. You know, they were a very vocal generation as they came of age in their teens and 20s in terms of protests against the Vietnam War, which was really based on self-preservation. As much as it may have been idealistic, let's not forget the baby boomers may have been against the war in Vietnam, but they were against the war in Vietnam because they were being drafted and their lives were at stake. So it wasn't just idealistic. It wasn't just some altruistic, this is wrong. They didn't want to go to war. They didn't want to die. I don't blame them.
But let's be honest as to what was motivating. And of course, there was a freer view on the use of drugs, and there's movements for civil rights. So there was a lot of things that the baby boomers, clashed upon with their parents in an effort to make our society more fair and more equitable and more open. And we're, I think, at that crossroads again. And it's ironic that the baby boomers, who were so much for an open society and breaking from their parents' way, are now resisting when their kids, the millennials, are resisting against the baby boomers. Baby boomers are not used to that. They've always been catered to. And now we've got a strong group of people, the millennials, in number, who are charging through. Poor Generation X, which was all the rage in the mid-90s, they came and went. I don't know what happened to Generation X. There was, it was all the grunge era, and Gen X was all you heard about in the mid-90s. Gen X, Gen X, Gen X. And Gen X just didn't seem to either have the numbers or really have the motivation or the ambition, but I didn't see them really make a difference, really exert their power. And they sort of just handed it over, and the millennials took it and are running with it. And we'll see what happens with the Gen Z now, I guess, or Gen Y, whatever's next. But millennials definitely have the hold. And so now as they go out into the world, well, yes, they were certainly coddled with play dates, and they were given a lot of stuff that materialistically, that whatever they wanted, they got. There was a sense of entitlement. There was a sense of pointing and getting. And, they were also, why do we have, everybody taking pictures of themselves? Because millennials have been photographed literally from the day they were born, literally from the day that their head emerged from their mother's body. The video camera, they have been photographed before that, when you think about it. They've been photographed in the uterus by an ultrasound. So they've been on camera when they were zygotes. So it should become as no surprise to us that this generation wants and needs to be seen and heard by themselves. There's no question that they're narcissistic. Everybody's narcissistic. The name narcissist came from the Greek god who looked at himself in the water. Human beings are narcissists. We love ourselves. The only difference now is that used to be an attribute that was pushed down in our behavior. It wasn't good to be conceited. It wasn't good to brag. But thanks to the iPhone, thanks to the ability to talk to the world in an instant, to take your picture and send it out in an instant, as I always said, what the iPhone really did was validate narcissism. It encouraged it. For decades and centuries, human behavior has tried to keep down narcissism. Technology today has thrown that out the window. It encourages you to be narcissistic. And since it's a natural part of the human existence, it overflows. And that's where we're at today. I know I've been talking for a while. I still haven't gotten to my main topic. I will. That's the whole idea of why you listen, right? Got to give you some background first before I make my point. So we have the millennial generation that is now taking hold. And many of the arguments about their behavior are valid, and some aren't. Some of them can be attributed to any past generation. Some of them are very unique to this generation, I think have some validity to them. As I said before, though, don't blame them completely. Their parents raised them. So some blame has to go there. I'm not seeing the baby boomer generation parents or even the Gen X parents, whatever you want to call them, taking a lot of responsibility for raising a millennial. As I said, millennials did not fall out of the sky. Someone raised them. So we once again have to take responsibility, just as every generation has. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. This is the way of the world. But this is where we are today. So I'd say for the last 6 or 7 years, the millennials, as they have begun to come of age, as I said, and drive the culture now, just like the baby boomers did, and they will be driving it for decades to come, just as the baby boomers have. Baby boomers have moved the culture in different ways. Some can argue good or bad, but there's no question of their impact. And that's where the millennials are now. That's why I think there's such a clash between the two, because you have two formidable forces here just by sheer number of people that think the same within their group. And now their groups are butting up against each other as one is moving in and one is moving out, but one is not moving out voluntarily. And that's where the friction is. And it's always that way, as I said before. This has always been that way. It's just more pronounced today because of our overall culture and our ability to communicate so quickly and around the world and have these things in the public, the court of public opinion on a regular and daily and minute-by-minute basis. So it seems more unique. It seems more heated. It really isn't. It's just the same as it's always been. It's just like everything in our culture today. It's just bigger. It's just louder. That's the difference. So the millennials have been attacked on many sides. And I will say that I have observed some of the, in general, millennial behaviors. I'm certainly there's are individual people that don't just fall lock, stock, and barrel. But when you look at a group in general, you see some trends in their behaviors. And I have certainly been critical. And in fact, I've started a segment I used to do many times called the Millennial Meter, which I started about 5-6 years ago with my godson, Patrick, who is a millennial. I think he's 34 years old, so he's right smack in there. And the whole idea was to, identify the millennials and then judge what I was doing by a millennial's point of view to see if I was still cool, still hip. And in the meanwhile, I could also add my own critique. And I love doing that because I learned a lot of things from Patrick, and maybe he learned some things from me. Unfortunately, he moved away, doesn't live in the area now, so I don't really see him personally as much, and we are in contact, but not as much as we used to, so I haven't done that segment in a while. But in fact, I should get his take on this. Maybe I'll try to give him a call. But yeah, so believe me, I'm not washing my hands on this. I've certainly been critical of the millennial generation. But I also give them credit. It's their time, right? So not everything they do is wrong. Not everything they do is right. And that's the way it's always been. So there's been a lot of criticism, as I said before, about entitlement and immaturity and expectation and narcissism. And the millennials have sort of, I was surprised, they sort of, just kind of brushed it off. But now it's becoming a regular refrain, and I think they finally have had it up to here. And good for them, right? I'm surprised they took it this long. What's taking you so long, millennials, to say I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore? The good old Howard Beale line from Network in 1975 and 76. They're not going to take it anymore. Because now the millennials have been out into the world for a good 10 years, out of college. They're trying to build careers and families and a life for themselves. And they're finding that the world is not as embracing and as excited about them as it was when they were teenagers or little kids. And everybody gave them everything they wanted. There's no free passes in the world. And I think the millennials are learning that lesson. And they're learning it a little later because they were coddled and overprotected. And they were injected with high levels of self-esteem that were granted, that were never earned. Nothing wrong with self-esteem. It needs to be earned. It cannot be given. And there was a big parenting move in the 80s and 90s of boosting kids' self-esteem. In exact opposite of the old adage of children are to be seen, not heard. Well, in the 80s and 90s, when these millennials were born and raised, a parenting philosophy was you've got to instill these kids with this self-esteem. We had generations when children were held down and they need to be encouraged and need to be told how great they are. So all of a sudden, you know, we stopped keeping score in sporting events and everybody got a trophy, and we've realized that once again that was to the needle on we went too far. We overcompensated. And we're seeing the results of that. We're having people going out in the world expecting that everybody just can't wait for them to walk in a room and that they will be given jobs and they will be given good jobs and they will be given high titles and because they're used to being put on a pedestal. The world is not going to put you on a pedestal. You have to fight to get up on that pedestal. You got to make your way. Certainly people can help you along the way, but it is a tough fight and it's up to you. And I don't know if the millennials as a generation have that instilled in them, because they didn't have that when they were being raised. They were given. They were told. They were driven everywhere. They were told who to, you know, these are your friends and this is your play date and you're going to take violin and you're going to have a batting instructor and you're going to take swimming and you're going to, I mean, this was, their lives were mapped out and now they're on their own and the world is not that ordered and no one's taking care of them and no one is driving them places, and they've got the realizing that the world is not an easy place. It never has been. It never will be. And there are no assurances, and doors are not open for you all the time. You've got to knock down those doors on your own. And hopefully, I don't know, as a generation, if they're equipped to do that. Because of the way these parenting philosophies were 30-some years ago. So we are seeing the result of that because I think we overcompensated. But what millennials are most upset now about, at least in their perspective, is, you know, baby boomers, my life is not what I expected it to be. I can't get a good job. I can't buy a house. I can't pay my rent. I can't do whatever I want because you have created a world that is so screwed up that it doesn't provide me any opportunities, and we're going to be busy fixing up your mess as opposed to trying to do something that we want because you've left the place in such disorder. Now, that can be viewed as a, once again, a kind of a spoiled viewpoint. Or there could be viewed as there's some validity to that. And yes, if you look at the state of the world, you can say, boy, what did you guys do in the last 50 years? Well, you could say that once again to every generation. It's how you view it. It's your perspective. Past generations were not expecting to be handed things. I think the millennials do. If there's one aspect that there is an expectation is that everything's just supposed to come easily because it always has. It was always predetermined for them or at least handed to them. So I could see where that perspective comes from. I don't think it's correct, but I see why they have it. And now that they're in their mid-30s and looking at 40 coming quickly, and they're still not feeling very established or confident in their future, they're not blaming themselves. They're blaming the generation before them, just like every other generation has. But they're doing it in a very interesting way, which comes to my point of today. Apparently, some millennials, and this will spread fast because of the internet and because of social media, so get ready. If you haven't heard it yet, you may very soon. So some millennials are so mad and so tired, as I said, what took them so long to say we're as mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. But I think as a whole, the millennial generation is looking around and saying, not only are things not good and prospects aren't good now, but are they going to get any better? And when they hear this constant berating from an older generation about how wrong they are or how they act and the way that they're not as mature or responsible, you know, they're tired of hearing it. And they've always rolled their eyes, but maybe not. They always roll their eyes to themselves, but maybe not to those who were commenting on them. But that is changing with two simple words that are very, very telling about a society we're in and how we are very individualistic now. The world used to be much more communal as a whole, because we all felt that we were in this together. And because, as I said before, there were limited amounts of communication outlets, and we all shared the same information. But today, because of the internet, all types of information are going out. There's very little vetting of it's whether it's true or not. And the whole goal of the internet, the whole goal of social media, is self. It's your individual. You want to listen to the music that you want to hear now. So that's where we have Spotify and Pandora. You want to watch the television that you watch. So that's why we have streaming services now. You want to listen to whatever song or video, so you know you want to give your opinion on something. So that's why we have YouTube. You want to write your own music and sing to the world. You have YouTube. It's all about us. We have individualized the world now. We have created a world that is good for us. So we are more worried about ourselves than we are about the big picture, sadly. And that's not good. And that's where we are moving. And I don't know if we had a world war like we had 50 years ago or 60 years ago. I don't know if what this generation, how they would react to that. Would they be able to sacrifice? They're not used to it. Not their fault completely. That's how they were raised. They didn't really want for much. Their parents gave them whatever they wanted, almost to the point. What I have to wonder about was, yeah, I'm not involved in this, but you know, we hear about all these college loans. Well, if they had to take out that much money for college loans, then where did all the money go that their parents earned in those first 20 years? Were their parents putting away money for college? See, I don't know if they were. They were so worried about the moment. Their kids wanted Nintendo. Their kids wanted whatever the new fad was. They had to have the newest this and the newest that. And they were spending and spending. When it came, all of a sudden, the kids were 18 and there was no real money in the bank. You hear about stories from 50, 60 years ago where people said, you know, my parents worked 3 jobs to send us to college. Well, today, because I think parents were so worried about being a friend and giving their kids everything they wanted the first 18 years of their lives, There's only so much money that goes around. And so, why would you need to take out such huge school loans if your parents had been saving money for the last 20 years? Maybe they weren't. There's a lot of factors here, folks. But anyway, the millennials have said, we're mad as hell. We're not going to take it anymore. And they're telling their accusers to their face now. They may have been rolling their eyes amongst each other like, oh, here goes another baby boomer telling us how terrible we are. But now they're saying enough is enough. And so when a baby boomer talks about a millennial and talks about either the way they're behaving or the way that they look at the world and how it's not correct, according to the baby boomer perspective, because the boomers or because the millennials feel as if the baby boomers have left them a mess to clean up as far as government and society and plastic bottles floating in the oceans and climate change, they look around and they don't see a lot of positives that the baby boomers have left them with. Which isn't true, which isn't fair. As I said, 50 years ago, there was huge segregation in this country. No civil rights. The idea of a gay marriage was unheard of. There have been some strides made. You can't completely condemn the baby boomers, but they were self-absorbed too. So they raised self-absorbed kids. That makes only sense, right? But our culture is different in the last 50 years. We don't go to war now with a blind eye. We try to decide whether it's right or wrong. We've seen the government being vetted of scandals more than it used to. We've seen the many of you on the kind of baby boomer agenda. We're seeing drugs now being legalized. Like I said, we had great segregation in the South in the 60s. That wasn't that long ago. That's gone. We've got gay rights now and gay marriage. That's unheard of. You can argue about white supremacy things going on, but I'm talking about on the books, legalized the way it was, institutionalized. So we have made strides, but we also have come up short in the last 50 years. And so did the generation before us, and so did the generation before that, and so have every generation. But the millennials are mad because they've sort of had everything handed to them, and this is their first experience of this. So they're as mad as hell, and here's a phrase that if you haven't heard it, you're going to hear it soon, and it'd be interesting to find out if it ever gets said to you, if you are a boomer. Or if you're a millennial, have you said it yet? But here's the phrase. It's only two words, but my goodness, it says a lot, especially about the viewpoint and the overall acceptance or non-acceptance of the criticism and, as I said, of the culture that the millennials are left with in their minds to fix. So when a boomer gets on their soapbox and says how wrong the millennials are, and here's why, the new retort, sarcastic, cutting, but very telling, the new retort by a millennial to a baby boomer, who may be saying, in my day, we didn't do this, and that's why my day was better than yours. As I said, every generation does it, but this is the first time that I think one generation has really been a little, a little more proactively dismissive. I mean, the protesters of the baby boomers who were protesting against the war and things like that, they said some rough things on their signs. But this one, this new phrase from the millennials to the boomers, as I said, ironic that the boomers were protesting and now they're being protested against by the up-and-coming generation. But if a boomer gets on their pedestal about a millennial, they're not just rolling their eyes amongst each other now, the millennials. They're actually coming back at the baby boomers with two words. It's dismissive. It's a little disrespectful, but it's also, and it might be a little uninformed and maybe a little unfair, but it's how they're feeling. So at least it's honest. Might not be accurate, but at least it's honest, because they're tired of hearing all the criticisms. And so when a baby boomer gets on their soapbox to talk about the millennials and what they're doing is wrong, instead of making an argument or trying to change their minds, which we know when we argued with our parents or we argued with another generation, you could have had the best argument and all the logic, but it doesn't matter because that's the way a previous generation was brought up and thought. It really is a fruitless argument in many ways sometimes. So I think the millennials have tried to make their case and it hasn't really been embraced. And so they're just looking at the baby boomer, listening to the baby boomer's tirade about how they're entitled and coddled and narcissistic and how they're doing this wrong and they're doing that wrong. And the millennial is looking at the baby boomer or reading some rant on some social media thing and responding in a very quick, two words, but very telling response, a very dismissive response, a very disrespectful response. But as I said, an honest one, two words. Okay, boomer. As in, yeah, okay, I've heard you. Whatever. Whatever is a big millennial phrase. It maybe really should be three words. It should be okay, boomer, comma, whatever. I would add the whatever. But yeah, okay, boomer, whatever you say. That's kind of the tone. And wow. I think that's a really cutting phrase. You know, when you're in an argument and you're talking to somebody and you start to get animated and you start to get enthusiastic, your voice probably raises and somebody just says, okay, relax. Oh, that's so patronizing. Okay, relax. Oh, that's so patronizing. It makes you even more mad, doesn't it? Oh. Slow, okay, relax. Oh, that other person just grabs all the power from you by being very calm and very dismissive, even though they are just as mad as you are, but they're acting as if they're in control, and they do grab the control back from you. And so that's what this is. You get on your high horse and say, hey, millennial, bop, 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 beep, bop, boop, bop, beep, and then they come back with, okay, boomer, as if, whatever. You know what? Whatever you say, it doesn't matter because look at the mess you've created. Look at the mess you've given our generation to clean up for you. Wow. Now, I bring this up because I don't know where I stand. As I said, I'm right on the cusp. So I'm not a baby boomer. I have not been told yet, okay, boomer. I'm waiting for that. I haven't been told it yet. I don't feel I'm a baby boomer, first of all. I'm right on the cusp. So I don't really fall into this. But as I said, I was raised by older parents. And so I do have some of those, as much as I am a liberal-minded person, I was still raised by people that had a much more black and white view of the world because that's the era that they grew up in. And so we did clash quite a bit because I like to see the gray in everything. I like to see both sides. And it was very difficult for them to understand that. Not in a bad way, but as I said, we clashed on many issues because, you know, they viewed me as some hippie, even though I'm not a hippie. I'm not a baby boomer hippie, but I'm not a Gen X slacker either, and I'm not a Depression era person. I don't know what I am. I don't know where I fall in. I'm a man without a generation. Now, I can't say, okay, boomer, because I'm close enough to it, but I don't have a lot in common with a 75-year-old person in terms of that, because that's what the original baby boomer is. Baby boomer that was born in 45 is 75 years old. I'm not 75 years old. So I'm more in tune, however, with some things of that era. But then as people get older, their views change too. So I don't know where I'm at. I've always felt like I'm a person without a generation. I've always felt that I've floated above them all, and picked and parsed and took some a la carte things from all of them over the last 75 years of influence, even though I'm not that old. But my parents were born in the 20s. So I was raised by older parents. So I have a lot of different influence. I was raised by older parents, but as I was growing up, I was influenced by younger people. And now, even though I've reached middle age, I'm still influenced by the culture. I'm still very involved in the pop culture, so I'm influenced by that as well. So I don't know where I fall, but I'm sure that I will say something that will merit an okay boomer response. And I don't know how I'm going to handle that when I get it. Because that's the same as being, okay, relax. They'll sit there and listen to you, and then they'll say, okay, boomer, sure. Okay, relax. You don't have to yell. Oh, so patronizing. But that's where we're at right now in 2019, as we approach 2020, as we approach a new decade of this century. We've got this big millennial group who will be in charge and will be driving our culture. And in 10 years, they will be firmly ensconced, and the baby boomer generation will have less and less influence because they will have less and less numbers in another 10 years. But we have another 10 years, I think, to have that battle. But right now, the millennials have been sitting back and taking it for a while. But they're not taking it anymore. They're tired of hearing how wrong they are. They're looking to lay some blame on the next generation, as it's been done all the time. There's always been a generation gap. Every generation thinks theirs is the best. Every generation thinks theirs nostalgia is the coolest. Every generation also thinks that their time on Earth is probably going to be the end. That's how narcissistic we are and arrogant we are. We can't imagine a world without us. And yet, this world's been going on for millions of years. But our minds can't get around that. You mean there's going to be a day when we're not here? That doesn't sound... That's why do you think every generation always thinks the world is going to end? They're always talking about the end of days coming in 10 years because we think that our time here is the most important. And all we really do is that when you look back at people that were saying that 300 years ago and 500 years ago and Plato and Aristotle were thinking that, and the writers of Revelations in the Bible were expecting the world to end very soon. Why do you think they have Revelation at the end? We're all very self-absorbed. So I guess if fair play is fair play, that the only way that a boomer can really come back at a millennial is if in that conversation the millennial gives them the okay boomer, then I guess the only the only good retort to come back with would be, yeah, you got it. Okay, millennial. And so, ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Here at WGNplus.com and anywhere that you get your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and tell your friends about Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Thank you for your loyalty. It's much appreciated. I hope you enjoyed episode 182. I am Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen. Okay, boomer. Okay, millennial. Okay, folks.